Back on the Jefferson Exchange, you can raise the temperature in a room full of opinionated people just using the single word immigration. That is our next topic, but it's less about immigration policies, practices, and procedures, legal and not, and more about the reactions of children affected by it. Sylvia Rodriguez-Vega gives us stories about art by the children of immigration in Arizona and California, and the art itself in the book Drawing Deportation, Art and Resistance Among Immigrant Children. Sylvia Rodriguez-Vega is an assistant professor of Chicana and Chicano Studies at the University of California, Santa Barbara. Thank you so much for joining us on the Jefferson Exchange.
Thanks so much for having me.
We do get recent events and people in the book. Donald Trump and the wall, for example, could not be left out. But this project goes back several more years. Would you tell us, Sylvia, how it started and what you wanted to do?
Absolutely. I started this, well, it wasn't a book when I started, but I started working with children in 2008 at a community center, and I noticed that a lot of the kids would come in after school and would be really worried about things that were happening in the community, specifically around detention raids that were basically their parents would go missing. They'd be detained and then deported. And so kids started to come in and talk about it. And this was in 2008 in Arizona. And I basically was creating a mural with children, and I asked them, what do you want the mural to be about? And they said, can we make it about peace? And when I asked them, what does peace look like? They said, it looks like Sheriff Joe Arpaio shaking hands with a Mexican. And that really captivated my attention because it really resonated with the community, with the children. And unfortunately, that mural at that time was too controversial to go up on the wall of this community center. But I asked kids, draw a picture or write a letter or a poem and tell me why this mural matters to you. And I collected dozens of drawings that were so powerful. And I knew that I wanted more people to be able to see children's experiences. And that kind of led to working on this project that eventually became the book.
What do you think, Sylvia, that we can learn from children's art that would not show up in statistics or other studies?
That's a great question. You know, art tells a deeper story. I also interview children and interview their families and teachers and school administrators. And I would say that the research would not be as detailed and complete without the artistic accounts that they share. I would sit with the child and ask them a basic question about anything, and I could tell that they were afraid to give a right or wrong answer. And then I had already known them for months and worked with them in art, and I would ask them about something they shared in class, and they often gave me a one-word answer or a yes or no response or said simply, I don't know. But through creating a drawing or a theater skit or journaling, I was able to really get a deeper understanding of things that they've gone through, how it's impacted their lives. And I just saw the power of art as a tool to really get a complete, deep sense of children's thoughts and feelings and experiences.
So that's art as a tool. You also get into children basically being used as tools in the book. You say the separation of families early in the Trump years was by no means the first use of children as levers in immigration. Take us back a bit further in that story.
Yeah, in the book, I argue that separating families and basically creating suffering with children and parents is a very American practice. And we can think back to the Japanese internment camps where children and families were taken out of their communities and put into these camps. Also, you know, Indian boarding schools where children were taken away from their communities, from their families, and put into schools to become Americanized and to strip them of their culture, language, beliefs, et cetera. Or the enslavement of Black people where children were literally sold and separated. And so this is a historical practice that unfortunately has continued to repeat. And the most recent iteration of that is what has happened in the border where it's the Trump's zero tolerance policy. And although it happened in 2018, till this day, over 1,000 children are still separated from their families. And the point of these policies is suffering, specifically with the immigration policy a few years back. The point was to create suffering so that migrants who are considering coming to the United States would not do so. And so children are tools to create the suffering, unfortunately.
Sylvia Rodriguez-Vega is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. Her book is Drawing Deportation, Art and Resistance Among Immigrant Children. And lest anyone say, well, they're just the children of immigrants, I mean, you point out the size of this demographic. Give the numerical importance.
Yeah, there are about 5.5 million children who have at least one undocumented parent in the U.S., and the majority of that number, actually 4.5 million, are children who are U.S. citizens, and they were born here, and we know that just in probably another decade or two, most children in our school systems are going to come from mixed-status families. Which means that someone in their family is an immigrant, maybe first generation or second, but, you know, they're going to share this experience, and immigration issues are going to deeply matter to them.
Well, so they may not be held in high regard by some portions of the population, but the kids notice, don't they?
They do. They're so attentive. They may not be communicating it with their parents or family members or teachers. But when I ask them, what are the things that you think that are important to you when you hear about what's happening in today's world, they would talk about so many things, you know, pollution, violence, drugs. But often it would always go back, especially during the campaign years and Trump's first year in office, it would always go back to immigration. And so I could tell that they were very worried about the border wall. They were worried about their families being deported. They were worried about the things that were said about them in the media. And so I knew that they were paying attention, and I knew that they had a lot of opinions and feelings about what was happening in politics in general.
And you describe the stress that produces in kids and get into some science on that. But were the kids given art assignments specifically to help deal with that stress?
Not initially. It wasn't supposed to be a tool for minimizing the stress or the anxiety or the physiological effects of these worries. It was meant to really just understand what they were experiencing and to give them a tool to use, to learn, to be creative. Over the time of doing this with children, I did notice how it was an opportunity to cope with that stress and then learning about the psychological effects of stress and trauma on children's bodies and minds and brains specifically. I was able to see how art and the process of creating art really resembled other processes of calming the mind and the nervous system, like meditation and such. And so I started to really understand how creating art about the things that scared you the most was a very calming and healing process. And it was a really amazing opportunity to be able to do this with the children in various states of various countries of origin during different political administrations. But they all shared a common fear about immigration, which was very powerful.
Calming and feeling for them, I get that part of it. But, you know, then we look at this and we get to feel some of the anxiety that they feel. And we as readers of the book get it all at once. And some of it is really remarkable in detail, like lights from helicopters in the picture on the front of the book. And there's a lot more like that inside. And the raw feelings expressed here. You got to see this coming in clumps, but we're among the students. Talk about what you were feeling and experiencing as the artwork accumulated.
You know, it definitely was overwhelming at times, and I can't imagine that looking at the drawings is more overwhelming than experiencing this in your daily life as somebody who's an immigrant and is afraid that their family will fall apart or their family will disappear, parents will be deported. But what I also noticed with the scary things that would come up, like fearing for their lives and for their families or separations and deaths even that they had experienced related to the border and immigration, they also had an opportunity for some ease in this. Like, through the theater skits, I really learned how children are so resilient and powerful in being able to speak back to these ideas of power and leaders by using satire, by using humor, by poking fun at the things that scare them. And that was a really beautiful lesson that I feel, you know, should be an opportunity that they should have more often.
So they were almost doing their own sketch comedy about what was happening to the people they know and love?
Exactly. They would create a skit, for example, where Trump is at the border, but then they have a family who's trying to cross the border and reunite with their loved ones. And there's this part where there's a kid who's playing Trump, and we had props, so he pulled out a blonde wig and put it on his head. And he's, like, walking in with so much authority. And this is a kid who's usually shy and isn't so outgoing. But he walks on stage, and he has so much self-confidence. And then he improvises that it's so dusty on the border that his allergies start acting up. And when he sneezes so powerfully, the wig flies off his head. And to kids, that was the funniest thing that they'd ever thought about and seen, especially during a time where every time President Trump came up, they were full of fear and anxiety and were stressed out because of the implications of what he was saying about immigration and about their families. But art was a moment to really take back some of that power.
And how did the kids respond initially? Because, you know, some people can be like, oh, I'm really bad at drawing. I don't want to do that. And I just wonder if they jumped at the chance or if they were a bit reluctant to get started.
Yeah, that's a really wonderful question, because I feel like children's best way of communicating is through art. They all really valued being able to have time to draw. I gave them all supplies that they could take home and a sketchbook. And they would come back and show me all their drawings. And the kid who was the best at drawing was like the coolest kid, the most popular one. And they really like rallied behind this idea of like, we like to make art. I think we kind of lose that as we age and we grow up and we judge ourselves for not being the best artist. But I think that they come into it with a full belief in just going with the process and trying their best. And, you know, it was really powerful seeing what came out of that. They intentionally used color in very specific ways and perspective and size and scale. And they were just wonderful artists. And it's amazing, because there aren't many opportunities for them to do art or have extracurricular activities that are creative. So it was really wonderful for them to have the opportunity and just be really good at it.
I looked at the plates in the book first and then read. And the very first picture is a house with sun and flowers, and it looks, you know, neat and orderly and all that stuff. And then I didn't realize that the sun is burning down, the flowers are wilting, and there's a cage around the house with the caption, "Immigration is making everything fall apart." How did Gabriel explain what he drew and wrote there?
That image, honestly, is one of the most impactful images of the book. I was amazed when I saw this drawing and asked, what is this about? What I learned in asking about the drawing was that Gabriel's father had been detained and deported. And so you see that there is a mother and children, and they're all frowning. And children usually draw a sun or people with a huge smiling face. Like, that's an automatic thing. So when that is missing from a drawing or a face, it's very intentional. And so he mentioned that when his dad was detained and deported, the mom was really afraid to go anywhere, because even to go to the grocery store or pick up the kids from school, if the turning light wasn't on, if the windshield had a crack on it, she could be pulled over and then questioned for her immigration status, which the children feared that would leave them, you know, in the foster care system or to be adopted or just away from their family. And so Gabriel drew the house inside of a cage, feeling constricted, feeling like we can't leave our house because it's dangerous outside. And in the book, I argue that during this time of the drawing, during the Obama years, we went from a metaphorical time of caged existence to a quite literal one during the Trump administration, where families and children were actually caged and detained.
Sylvia Rodriguez-Vega, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. The book is Drawing Deportation, Art and Resistance Among Immigrant Children. We'll come back to the Jefferson Exchange in 90 seconds. Sylvia Rodriguez-Vega is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, an assistant professor of Chicana and Chicano Studies at the University of California, Santa Barbara. She has worked with children in making art about their circumstances vis-a-vis immigration, legal and not, and resulted in a book called Drawing Deportation, Art and Resistance Among Immigrant Children, and it is loaded with art. We talked to Sylvia previously, so I can't invite you to join our conversation by email today. Sylvia, talk about your own immigration story and how art helped you in your youth.
Yeah, so I came with my family when I was 3 years old. We had a visa, and it expired later. I found out, you know, in adulthood, my actual immigration story. But even though I wasn't aware of it, I knew that we weren't safe. And I knew that we couldn't go back and visit family. And little by little, the impact of being undocumented really impacted me, especially as I graduated high school and wanted to go to college and get a driver's license. And eventually, you know, I was able to get to college, but I also had experiences of family separation because of immigration issues that drastically changed the trajectory of my family's life. All the while, I was in a theater group, and we would do community theater about tons of issues, every issue that you can imagine that impacts families and youth. And I would say that being in theater really transformed my life in a way that I was able to also process the things that were happening in my own life and in my community. But it also became a tool of communication, empowerment, and organizing during a very stressful anti-immigrant time in Arizona, which was when many policies, anti-immigrant policies, were being tested and experimented with Arizona immigrants. And later, I just went back to the power of art, especially when I became an educator and worked with kids. It was the best way of processing these really tough things. And I think it's a tool not only that is helpful for immigrant children, but children who and people in general who are struggling with all sorts of difficulties in life.
Well, talk about that, though, because it's not like all kids have access to the kinds of art programs that were given to the kids in your book, and for that matter, expanded a little larger. I mean, you have parents who can't get access to things like preschool that would help their kids develop.
Exactly. I mean, in the state of Arizona, during that time, 2006, 2007, 2008, there were over a dozen policies that were anti-immigrant, one of them being that children who come from undocumented parents couldn't enroll in pre-K programs, couldn't take English classes that were subsidized by the government, couldn't do basically all areas of their lives were restricted. And in those communities where people are already marginalized, where people are disenfranchised, there aren't resources, the schools are also suffering. When they don't have the property taxes of living in a community that is well off or economically prosperous, children are suffering because there aren't classes that involve music or dance or pottery or theater. And so you have schools where all they're learning are the usual subjects, and they don't have opportunities of creativity. While in communities that are affluent, there are wonderful programs of art, and children are able to be creative in their regular subjects like math and science and history. They're also embedded with really beautiful opportunities that are artistic. And even after school, parents are able to afford after-school programs or extracurricular activities or enroll their kids a specific instrument or dance or anything. And so sadly, we have this idea that we know that art is useful for children. However, we don't create opportunities for all children to have access to art.
Sylvia Rodriguez-Vega, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. The book is Drawing Deportation, Art and Resistance Among Immigrant Children. And so let's talk a little more about the art. I mentioned the helicopter with the bright light shining down. There are buses taking people back across the border. Lots of police, usually written as cops, on the artwork by the kids. But a couple of pictures really caught my eye because they're so very spare. And I checked. These are different kids, different ages, just little people in a single corner of a big sheet of paper. What do you suppose that was about?
Yeah, I wanted to create the exact image that children drew. I didn't want to zoom in and have you see the actual tiny little drawing that's on the corner, because to me, having a whole sheet of paper available and only drawing at the bottom half corner a tiny little person. And in one of the drawings that I'm thinking about, it's somebody who's sitting down with their face in their hands and slouching, you know, like in a downward position. And that image and images like that really communicate isolation to me and a desperation of not having others or help around. It's very powerful. Most often, you know, children will draw the whole entire page, especially in the center, in huge scale and proportions. So it was very drastic to notice that there was a tiny image. And similarly, they had access to all the colors that they could imagine. And some children still decided to do an image in only pencil or black and white. Which also communicated a lot. I analyzed all of these drawings through a systematic coding where I coded for colors and nations and characters and all types of things. And in analyzing the different codes that were prevalent, the use of color was very significant in communicating emotions.
Well, and so they take on not just things like, you know, police, helicopters, fences, walls, international borders, things like asylum denied. It is part of U.S. law, though, and there are some depictions even of that.
Yeah, especially in California, I worked with children during the Trump era who were from Central American countries. And a lot of them had come as children. I had children who would arrive that same year and could very vividly describe the experience of migrating. I had children who were separated from their parents and hadn't seen their mom in a number of years because the mom was in the country of origin. And so this was a very real and vivid and recent experience for many of the kids. While in the same class, I also had other children who were in second-generation immigrants or third, and didn't have any recollection of this, but were equally impacted by these policies and worried that even their own existence was in danger. But although these issues are complicated and there are many categories of citizenship and asylum and temporary protective status and so on, children still made sense of their families wanting to be together and not being able to. So they couldn't really understand exactly the law, but they knew important aspects of it, like asylum and like where their families were from, and that because of the laws, they couldn't be together.
And we mentioned that they're very aware of the things that people say about them. They're aware of how they get used as political footballs. And we talked about impressions of Donald Trump and things like that. But do they see themselves as resistors in the sense of the book's title, the Cub subtitle, rather, Art and Resistance Among Immigrant Children? Do they think of themselves as resisting?
I don't know if they would say we are resisting or I resist. But in analyzing what they were saying and doing and drawing, I certainly think that they were. For example, there was one play where there is a child who's watching the news and is afraid that their family will be separated and goes to school. And at school, he's being bullied because he's an immigrant. So he decides to go and talk to the teacher. And when he goes to class and tells the teacher, the next day, the teacher is wearing a MAGA hat in the drawing, a red MAGA hat. And to the student, this communicated, this is a person that I can't talk to, and I'm actually in danger, and I'm afraid. So then the student and some of their friends go themselves to the border where, in their imagination, Trump is having a rally. And they take basically protest signs and start asking Trump things like, why do you hate us? Why don't you like immigrants if your wife is an immigrant? Asking these very key questions that they actually do wonder about, and taking that power in their own hands, thinking like, maybe my teacher can't support me, or my parents can't do anything about it, or people, not everyone is going to rally behind me. But they took on that responsibility and confronted people like Trump and other politicians about it.
So
I would say that is resisting.
Resisting, okay. So lots of places and people, obviously, in the book. Lots of art, lots of theater, lots of tears, lots of other expressions of emotions. Is there any single event, Sylvia, that stands out to you more than any other in this journey for you?
I mean, I remember two of my students had a cousin who passed away on the border, and this cousin was 17 years old, so also a young person. And it was something so painful at home that they weren't allowed to talk about it because it was very depressing for the family members there. But I knew that in talking and mentioning it in class, they hadn't grieved, they hadn't processed, they hadn't cried very much. So they had that moment there. And months later, students recreated the story of this family member and created a fictional character that migrates and is able to arrive and connect, reunite with the family. And through the power of art, of theater, of imagination, they created these characters that accompanied the child, and all of them were children. And the two cousins were part of that group of children who helped this person arrive and not die. And so that story always, I always remember it, because I just saw how powerful it was for the two children in the class and for everybody else to support them through this really difficult moment.
Sylvia, you remind us in the book, because there is a longer description of law and history than we're giving here, but you remind us there's been no comprehensive immigration reform in nearly 40 years. During the State of the Union speech, we had members of Congress shouting, "Secure the border," at the president. Do you hold out much hope for a solution that might please a bare majority of people anyway?
I don't see that happening anytime soon, unfortunately. I feel like we had opportunities to create a comprehensive immigration reform. And unfortunately, the priority has always been to secure the border, to militarize the border, to become more restrictive and pour funds into enforcement rather than services when it comes to immigration. And so with all of these things, I don't know how much further securing the border will take us, and what that means in terms of, once we secure the border, then we can let people be here with citizenship. So I don't know. I feel like things have become more restrictive and harder for immigrants to come to the U.S. and to stay here and just live in peace.
And finally, Sylvia, take us back to that proposal for a peace mural that would have shown Sheriff Joe Arpaio shaking hands with a Mexican. Too controversial then. Did anything like it ever get done?
Yeah, the artist who was helping us do the mural actually ended up doing the mural a few years later in another location. And it was really powerful because children were the ones who sketched the mural and created the ideas. And on one side of the mural was all of the things that were happening in the community that they didn't want, like the separation and the lack of access to college and all of these terrible things. And on the other side, after the handshake, was the possibility, was a college degree, was a family together, was people smiling and being happy and healthy. And so that is the vision of children, and I feel like that should inspire us to fight for that vision.
The art really tells us a lot. The book is called Drawing Deportation, Art and Resistance Among Immigrant Children, the work of Sylvia Rodriguez-Vega, an assistant professor of Chicana and Chicano Studies at the University of California, Santa Barbara. Sylvia, thanks so much for sharing this with us on the Jefferson Exchange.
Thank you so much.
And that's it for today's Exchange. Check us out on the web at jeffexchange.org. Our senior producer is Angela Decker. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thanks so much for listening today and every time you listen to the Jefferson Exchange. Take care of yourself and have a good day.